Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Lucas and Vincent were not in the mainstream of gay life.
I was saving body parts such as skulls.
Doesn't it bother you that he's a fag?
You have done me a great service. Now I must service you.
And the drugs were always a cry for attention, for somebody to pay attention to me before I, you know, kill somebody.
You can imagine what it smells like if you go into a closed room.
Something is trying to get inside my body. Yeah, she's female and she's waiting for you in the cabana. And you want to sleep with me.
Buckle up, sodomites, and welcome to the Sinister Sissies podcast, your guide to true crime, horror, and everything man on man and macabre. I'm Jared, your master of depravity, staring at the beautiful face of Sam Hamilton via Zoom again. Sam.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, he was staring at my balls before.
Yes.
Apparently he prefers my face, but I groomed those balls real good for him, so I'm sad to hear that. Basically, I was trying to fix a tech issue, and my balls just accidentally appeared. But
it was,
you know, there's nothing better than a bit of a surprise genital.
It was an
showing,
experience.
You know?
It was an experience that I had.
Show and tell with Daddy and Slave.
Is either positive or negative?
All right.
I was about to
there's
say
my ego down
balls,
a few notches.
I was about to say speaking of balls, but that's not a very good tie-in for this movie.
We don't see any balls in this movie, but I feel like genitalia definitely does factor into a lot of the macabre happenings.
We're talking about a Spanish film, which is quite a difficult and disturbing movie. We're talking about In a Glass Cage. Or in my shitty
what
Spanish.
What is with Jared?
In my shitty Spanish. You didn't let me do my shitty Spanish. And my shitty Spanish.
Do your shitty Spanish.
Tras el cristal.
I just have to say though, Jared, what is with you picking these depraved movies now twice in a row that have just left me wanting to like jump for a window and hide from the world?
I love it. I love it.
My faith in society is lessening by the week.
I love a good nihilistic eat shit and die film. It's beautiful.
You couldn't even call these movies like rape revenge movies. They're just nihilistic. But there's definitely some artistic merit to both of them. I quite enjoyed both of them, but at the same time, I was very distressed and had to stop this one three times. So
oh, did you? Yeah, there's particular
like
scenes
not like
we'll
I could have made it through, but I was just getting a bit like
So In a Glass Cage was made in 1986 by Auguste Villaronga. How was that? That wasn't too bad. It was his first film. It was Villaronga's first film, and it received a whole lot of international attention and praise. I think you can't deny that this is like a good movie, right? Like it's a well-made
movie. It is very well shot. There are some incredible like suspense scenes. The scene, I guess we'll get into it as we talk about the film, but yeah, the scene where he's like harassing the guy's wife, I was like, my heart was pounding. And yeah, this great visuals, great performances. It's just, yeah, it's just really fecked up. I actually don't know if the film is still banned in Australia or not, but it was refused classification here when it first came out.
I think because there is, I mean, stylized abuse of children in the movie that's very graphic. And on a rewatch, when I first saw it, I thought it was like those scenes against children were like extremely graphic. But on a rewatch, they're actually not. They're just shot in such a way that it feels a lot more graphic than it actually shows.
Let's just say the opening scene grabbed me.
Yes.
Me by the balls, so to speak.
So I think that's a fair enough warnings. So, you know, the short plot to this is an ex-Nazi doctor, child molester, is in Catalonia. And we experience, he's in Catalonia and he's in an iron lung and the movie kind of takes off from there. If that sounds interesting to you, I highly recommend seeing this movie.
Should we explain what an iron lung is?
Oh, okay. Explain what an iron lung is. I don't know how to say it audibly. You kind of need to Google it.
Well, look, Google it if you're not sure, because I'll explain it inaccurately. But basically, he's immobilized and has to remain inside this glass cage.
Yes. Hence the title.
So he can continue breathing. So he's immobile. He can't move. He has a lot of time to reflect and then be confronted by one of his former victims.
And it's so clever, I think, to have such an evil, despicable character from the beginning be kind of vulnerable and pathetic. Like he just lies there and gasps for air. Like he doesn't have a lot of dialogue, and somehow it has a lot of presence to it. I thought that was very kind of clever in how it's done. But before there's no way we can talk about this movie without getting into spoilers. So we're now going to go through the plot, but highly recommend this movie if you want to see it before listening to us. But fair warning, it's very disturbing. The opening scene, which, as Sam said, captures your attention right away, we see Klaus, who is the former Nazi doctor who fled to Catalonia. He's not in an iron lung at this point. He's out in the open photographing a naked young boy who I'm assuming would be about 10 or potentially younger than that.
Definitely prepubescent. There is
hanging naked from the ceiling, bloodied and beaten, and incredibly graphic. You see everything, and you see Klaus taking photos. The scene shifts perspective a bit, and we see that somebody is watching him from the outside. That is, I suppose, our main character. I heard it pronounced Angelo and Angelo throughout the movie. I'm going to go with Angelo because I don't think I can pull off the slight accent in there.
You've made some attempts already this episode. So we'll stick to what Spanish, we know, eh?
Yeah. I'm slightly better with the French in Irreversible.
Well, I can only do Bogan. So you're already outclassing me.
So Angelo is watching him from the outside. Klaus picks up a plank of wood and beats the boy to death. Klaus then goes to the top of the tower. And do we actually see him jump? No. we just see him watching outward into the tower. But in our next scene, there's talk about an accident and a fall. And so the implication of that is that Klaus actually jumped and attempted to commit suicide. The opening credits play as we see photos of Klaus with very young boys. On a rewatch, I've realized that one of those young boys is actually the young Angelo. Because when I first watched this, it wasn't entirely clear to me that Angelo was one of the boys that he'd abused in the past. But on a rewatch, that's actually clearer. Is that a revelation to you? Did you pick that up or?
No, I thought that was really clear from the beginning, but
oh, really?
Maybe I already had in my head though that the premise of the film was one of like a pedophile's former victim becoming his nurse or something like that. So maybe it was already ingrained in my mind, but I felt like it was pretty
clear from obvious, the start.
But maybe,
well, on a rewatch, I think I probably clued into it fairly early on as well. He does present himself initially as just someone who had watched him and was inspired by his acts and that he wanted to do what he did after reading his diaries. But then over time, Klaus realizes that it was the young boy that he had abused earlier. So Klaus, after he jumped off the tower, is now, as we said, in an iron lung. Right off the bat, there's kind of the internal monologue of the wife as she writes a letter because she wants a nurse to look after him, where she ultimately, she just admits that he used to do experiments on children. So the wife here, Griselda, isn't exactly the most innocent person either. She's...
No, Griselda is one bitter Betty. She is not happy. Yeah. That actress really made me like hate her.
Yeah, she's kind of this like powerful matriarch type, you know, a bit of a Nazi. Although he does say that they met each other after he fled the war. So she just willingly knows that he's a Nazi. And they are also living there with Klaus and Griselda's daughter, Raina. So we know that Griselda wants to hire a nurse, and suddenly there's this very odd scene where their maid rushes in and says, someone just ran into his room. We don't know what's going on. And it turns out it's Angelo.
He's like, yeah, I'm here. I'm here to be a nurse. And she's like, I don't know you.
Yeah. And he's already had some sort of conversation with Klaus as he's lying in the iron lung. And Klaus convinces Griselda to have him look after him as a nurse. The actor who plays Angelo...
is very sexy.
He is very sexy. Kind of very distinct eyes and like a very odd presence to him. Like he's kind of unnerving but also innocent at the same time, which was like amazing casting, I think.
Look, yeah, very good casting choice. He definitely embodies kind of like the angel of death. Angelo, you know, he's like, you know.
Yeah.
He's innocent, but you can feel there's something else going on there.
Yeah, and so eventually Klaus convinces his wife to hire Angelo as a nurse. Angelo would also be living in the house. That night, Angelo... jumps on top of the cage and opens it up and kind of straddles Klaus in a very sexual way. Klaus is gasping for air because the iron lung is open, and Angelo's stroking him and goes in to kiss him as Angelo slowly goes down, seemingly like he's about to give Klaus a blowjob. And then so we
some
cut
serious
away.
Foreplay right there. That's yeah. Like asphyxiation to a whole new level.
And the psychosexual weird stuff to do with this is because Angelo was, we learn later, Angelo was abused by Klaus when he was like 6 years old. That flashback scene at the very end makes it look like Angelo was incredibly young, and is fascinated with Klaus. Griselda is pissed off that Angelo's there. She gets even more pissed off because she asks Angelo to give the maid a shot and soon realizes that he is not actually a nurse at all. Interesting following that, there's that scene where Griselda trips over the... She's arguing with Klaus about you know, getting rid of Angelo, and she trips over the power cord and she just hesitates because she contemplates letting him die for a period of time because she's as over him as anyone else.
Yeah, well, that, I mean, it was one of those scenes where you knew she wasn't really going to do it, but I think it definitely gives you a good indication of where their relationship's at and where she wants an out. She knows this man's despicable. Mm. Maybe somehow she was able to justify it to herself in the early years of the relationship, but yeah, she's repulsed by him, and you can tell that.
Meanwhile, the young Reyna develops, a little crush on Angelo. Reyna's probably, what, 12 or 13, I think. Yeah,
she's young. I'd say she's preteen.
Or maybe like 11. She kind of takes a shine to him straight away, I think partially because her mother's such a bitch. later, well,
despite how psychotic and deranged and damaged Angelo is, I'd still say he's the best pick of the three. So,
yeah. So
actually, before he starts carrying out murders,
yeah,
I take that back.
The Reyna Angelo dynamic kind of evolves over time, and the film ends in a really artsy way that I thought was kind of interesting in terms of their dynamic. Angelo starts reading Klaus's diaries from the war out loud to him. It talks about Klaus's experimentation with children. He would inject them with various chemicals in the heart and see how long they would last as part of his experiments. And then that eventually over time led to him molesting boys, who I'm assuming were young Jewish boys who he was experimenting on. As Angelo is describing this stuff, he strips completely naked and masturbates in front of Klaus. It's the second most disturbing, the second disturbing scene in the film after the opening. Him just talking about molesting boys and then masturbating over Klaus. What do you think? Did you find it sexy, Sam? Is that why you're looking weird?
I did not find it sexy, no. Is it implied that he ejaculated on Klaus? Because now he's, because then he's like, hey, Griselda, come in here. And he shows the wife. I guess his semen on Klaus, and then Griselda's understandably like, get the fuck out of my house.
Yeah, and because it's in the story, I think Klaus was ejaculating on the boy, and so it was repeating what was being described, which, again, understanding Angelo's psychology is so different because he keeps claiming that he wants to become Klaus, but I think there's also a huge motive of wanting to punish him or have him continually remember what he's done. But then straight after this scene, so as he's masturbating over Klaus, he does mention that he thinks his wife must go. And you said you like this scene where Angelo attacks Griselda.
It's a very well done like suspense scene, I think, because you sort of, he looks at Griselda in a way that unnerves her, and he knows, like, she kind of knows, like, fuck, okay. And at first, they're not sure if he is really going to do anything. It's one of those scenes that it just stays locked on, like, their gazes for quite some time. And you think at first that he might let her go if she just leaves. But, yeah, then it ends not so well for poor Griselda.
In a very...
She tries.
In a very Suspiria way, I thought. The hanging.
Yes. I mean, it was a very calculated and very... what's the word? An immaculate, elaborate way to stage her death, but he makes it work.
Well, yeah, because he hangs her initially and then puts her body on top of the iron cage. And so So he's forced to just watch her dead body, I think, for the entire night before he moves her.
Let's just say he's giving Klaus a taste of his own medicine in a big way. He ain't getting off easy. We know that he's unhinged and like destined for some like prime revenge now.
With Griselda gone, Angelo somehow manages to convince Raina that the mother's just left. She doesn't seem all that fussed by the fact that her mother's gone. I don't know. At some point, I think she does realize that Angela killed her mother, but I don't think she was, you know, that upset about it. She was definitely...
I feel like the film was sort of trying to tap into a bit of, like, Stockholm syndrome between Raina and Angelo, the sort of the same way that Angelo is sort of, like, stuck in the past and reliving the past now with the things that he's doing to get revenge on Klaus. So I feel like there was some sort of common thread there where it was like we eventually sort of become, in these situations, we kind of become our captors.
Yeah, and I suppose that's part of what follows then. So a couple of other things happen. Angelou fires the cycle of abuse.
It's quite common for people to do that, I guess, in real life.
Yeah, because the next thing that Angelou does, he has learned from reading Klaus's diaries that one way that Klaus used to attract boys is to offer them cigarettes or money. And Angelo meets a young boy out in the nearby town. They're kind of in an isolated place in the town. They're kind of the weird foreigners in the area. And Angelo initially offers him a cigarette, and the boy says no, and then offers him money to take things back to the house. Once they're at the house, we get a very disturbing scene. All the child actors in this movie are like crazy good, and that's half why it's so disturbing. Angelo takes the young boy to Klaus, tries to get Klaus to tell the boy to undress, because that's how he would usually go about molesting the victims. Angelo strips him, straps him to a chair, and then injects the boy with a syringe full of gasoline. And it's not a sudden death either. The boy kind of gasps for air over a long period of time before dying.
Yo, Klaus, amo la muerte.
Like it cuts quite erratically, like when he actually dies. But yeah, the build up is quite. It kind of reminded me of that scene in Promising Young Woman where someone's getting smothered with a pillow, and it just doesn't happen in 10 seconds. Let's just say that.
No, it's drawn out, and like I think it's so rare in movies to see them kill a kid generally, but when they do, it's usually very sudden, not this. Like drawn out, the child's gasping for air as he slowly dies, and so pretty fucked up.
What did you interpret, Jared, when so at first he's trying to instruct Klaus to get the boy to undress? Klaus won't do it, but then it doesn't take a whole lot of convincing. So what do you think it was? What do you think the movie was like trying to say in that moment?
There's a bit where I think it's more in the next scene, but there's a bit in both the scenes where it seems like Klaus, despite himself, is kind of getting off it. Or like he can't look away.
Yeah, I read it that it was kind of like that. No, no, no.
Yeah,
you know, that kind of like, that was meant to sound like someone who's like aroused and like quote unquote objecting.
Yeah.
You know, it, like when...
It,
yeah, that was a weird thing to say. It probably sounded like I was like saying something.
No, I think that's fair to say. Yeah, he's definitely, and this is the kind of moral ambiguity of Angelo, in that he is killing this boy, but he's doing it in order to punish Klaus because he thinks that what Klaus did was wrong, and so it's this very fucked up psychology, and because I don't know. I don't think Angelo is into this. I think he's doing it because it was done to him and he's repeating the cycle to punish Klaus.
Well, it definitely seems like he's primarily motivated by the revenge aspect. It doesn't seem like we never see him do anything to anyone unless it's going to be like for Klaus's eyes. So it's not like, you know, I feel like that they would have tried to show us in another way that he was sort of, he'd become just like Klaus if that was the case.
I know there's one interpretation that Angelo, as a way of dealing with his own trauma, slowly throughout the film becomes Klaus. And part of that is the house slowly transforms into, there's like barbed wire everywhere. Like it kind of transforms into a concentration camp. And Klaus starts dressing in these really kind of like, not quite full fascisty gears, but his dress changes and the way that he acts changes.
Yeah, definitely.
And that Angelo is trying to become Klaus as a way of kind of dealing with the fact that he was victimized to kind of become the offender.
It's just a shame that several people had to die for him to get his... I don't even know if you'd call this therapy, but to come to terms with his trauma.
Healing, maybe.
Yes, his healing process cost a couple of people some heartbeats.
In one of Klaus's diaries, there's a story of him making all the boys sing, and he picked the one that had the best voice in order to molest and kill. And Angelo's inspired by that. He goes to the nearby town and there's a choir group singing, and he selects a boy from that choir group. He takes him back to the house in front of Klaus, again doing what he did with the previous boy. This is the fucked up scene. Like this is the, like, I remember when I first watched this, that's what really made me want to turn off the movie, was this particular scene, because the actor is great, that kid actor. I did look, both the boys in this had successful careers in Spain, or continuing to work in Spain as actors. They didn't just do this.
Okay.
They didn't just do this one fucked up
film. Well, I'm glad
film.
This wasn't their only France acting. I was kind of thinking, like, I wonder if these kids acted again, because it's probably, you know, this is probably mildly traumatic, depending on what they were told, what direction they were giving.
This particular scene, I think the reason I find it so disturbing is the boy singing and crying and is stripped from the top down, and Angelo has a knife, but it's filmed... I don't know how to describe this without it seeming really inappropriate, but like it is filmed in a like sexualized way. Do you get what I mean? Like it kind of goes from his face and then like lingers downwards, which I think is meant to be like Klaus's perspective. Cause in that scene in particular, I really saw that he, again, despite himself, was being turned on by what was happening.
Yeah. It was definitely like an erotic gaze, I would say.
Yeah.
It's like strange as it is to word that way, because this is like a child.
Yeah.
I feel like it was definitely meant to be like Klaus's perspective.
Well, that's why it's disturbing though. It's because it's a film shot that's meant to be a sexy film shot on what is a young boy crying because he's terrified and singing out of fear.
While he's about to have his throat slit.
Yeah. So Angelo takes out the knife and slits his throat, and then the blood goes down his chest. And then there's a quick cutaway, which I think is meant to be like, jarring you that's actually occurred. So I think that's definitely a scene that stuck out in my mind when I first watched it. It's one of those things that it makes you feel like you're watching something. Like, as in, I for the podcast I watched like Salo, and Salo has a lot of those scenes, but at a certain point it's kind of... Have you seen Salo? 120
I actually haven't seen it. I've always been too afraid to watch it. It's the kind of film I would need a reason to like. If we revisit it for an episode, then I'd watch it. But that's probably all it's going to get me there.
Maybe that's like a Patreon audio commentary. Maybe it's a good movie. As in, Pasolini's a genius.
I know there's scat involved.
Yeah, and it's like See, at a certain point, it's like, because it's deliberately over the top with all of its violence and everything, it kind of becomes a bit ridiculous. And so you're not
I mean, I've always, when people have talked about it, no one's really like that film, like Scott. People say it's fucked up, but in that way, where it's kind of almost like, it's on the verge of being comical at times because they just, the envelope just keeps getting pushed to sort of like.
Yeah. It's a bit like the Human Centipede or like those sorts of things where it's, you know, it's impersonal as opposed to this particular scene where, again, that filmmaking is making you just watch this happen and it's very like intimate.
Because it's kind of, it's exploitative, but it's shot very artfully and it happens sparingly enough throughout the film that it still is very effective. It's not like when people tell me about 100 days of Salo, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Sodom. You know, everyone's like, oh, someone's shitting in someone's mouth, someone's doing this, someone's doing this. So it loses its power and eventually, I guess, just becomes almost like laughably nihilistic. Whereas this is kind of very measured in the way that it is presented.
Interesting. The poop in Salo was apparently, they deliberately made it so it was like chocolate, but that it also had like really bitter, weird flavors in there. Pasolini deliberately did it so that they would feel nauseated as they were eating. So that they had genuine...
Well, there you go. You got to draw those performances out somehow.
Yeah. These poor, like, teenage actors.
Premium Sara Lee chocolate ice cream isn't going to do it.
So, again, that's the big scene in the movie, I think, disturbing wise.
It's interesting, this film, because like not a lot happens at times, but it's very much like sort of a mood piece. Like I remember it was like 50 minutes in and I was like, oh, the plot sort of hasn't gone where I thought it would go. I thought this would get to where it is now, like in the first sort of 15 minutes, but it's, I don't know if I'd call it a slow burner per se, but yeah, there's kind of only like four or five big narrative beats, I feel like.
Yeah, I don't know, as in the you would know these things better than I would, but in terms of like acts, I suppose the end, I definitely think this killing is the end of a particular act, and then we've got like the final act. Mm. But it is kind of just like drifting in that really like nihilistic way of like, again, I think that adds to the disturbing aspect because it's not like the hero is going to save the day. Like there's no, we're not leading up to a great satisfying ending. It's just like awful shit is happening and we're just lingering in this space for now.
Yeah, so, I would agree with that.
So the final act, eventually Klaus becomes concerned that Raina might be at risk. Raina and Angela have been arguing for some time. Raina tries to leave, but Angela returns. There's
also an interesting scene where Angela tells Raina that he's her daddy now, or he's her father now.
He definitely took on this like this parental role, which again I think works with that narrative of Angelo transforming into Klaus, that he's assumed the father role. I'm your father now. And the kind of climactic moment in the film is Angelo finally removes Klaus from his iron lung, and this is where we see flashes back to when Klaus abused Angelo as a child. He repeats the dialogue of the flashback, so he offers him a cigarette and then makes Klaus go down on him as Klaus is kind of suffocating because he doesn't have the iron lung to breathe. And then Klaus eventually dies, and this is all done in Rena's presence. And the final scene, and I'm interested to know what your interpretation of this is. The very final scene is Angelo again takes on the total identity of Klaus and goes into the iron lung itself. And Raina, does she kind of become Angelo a bit in the end? She changes her appearance.
I think it kind of goes with this theme of like we become like that, what I was bringing up before of she sort of becomes his victim and gets encapsulated in that role.
Mm.
in the end. So she ends up presenting as a boy.
Yeah.
After finding a what appears to be a photograph, which I'm assuming was meant to be of Klaus and Angelo, but we never see the actual, like, we never see what she's looking at. And she goes into Angelo's room and she finds, like, boys' clothes. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, she puts them on and then she goes and tends to Angelo, and that's the end of the film. But yeah, I think it's sort of they've traded places almost.
Yeah, and I suppose it's that theme you were talking about earlier, that it's just the cycle of abuse continues. Very nihilistic message, I guess, to the overall film.
So yeah, definitely very interested to hear other people's perspectives on the film if they're able to access it. Because yeah, it is a bit of a rare check find, it out. But it's out there if you want it.
You can find it if you... I don't want to say anything that violates copyright law.
I mean, it's been released on Blu-ray and all that kind of stuff. It's just not... We definitely bought it on Blu-ray. That special edition, wow.
Definitely check it out if you can handle a kind of quietly disturbing but very well done movie. Thank you for listening to the Sinister Sissies podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Sinister Sissies. You can follow me on Twitter at Jared Bartle. You can follow us on Instagram at Sinister_Sissies, where you can also contact Sam. We would love...
I get very lonely.
He does. Send him
I would love... I enjoy the messages. You can send me whatever you want. I will take it.
We would love your support on Patreon if you can afford it. I don't know if I mentioned this earlier, but we're currently going through an odd funding thing right now. So if you could support us on Patreon, it would really help us out. And until next time, stay sinister.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.